Yes, man. Hey, welcome to the Money Flow Trading Society's podcast, Mastering the Trade. I'm your humble host, Gerald Peters. Always remember, man, you don't have to get it right. You just have to get it going. Welcome to the podcast.
You're able to do drugs during the day and then still function, still do your job?
How the fuck else would you do this job? Cocaine and hookers, my friend.
Bitcoin crossing the $70,000 mark for the first time on Friday this morning. It's now above $72,000. Joining us right now to talk Bitcoin is Michael Saylor, MicroStrategy Executive Chairman, and 8K out from the company this morning, revealing it just bought more than $800 million in Bitcoin. As of the end of last month, his company held about 200,000 Bitcoins.
After becoming the best performing asset of 2023, Bitcoin has held the number one spot in the indexes tracked by the MFG all of 2024. Bitcoin surpassed its high of 2021 and has been hitting all-time highs. History was made in January with the SEC's approval of 11 spot Bitcoin ETFs, which began trading the next day. What started out as a speculative investment, Bitcoin is now considered a real digital asset with a fixed supply of only 21 million coins, which contributes to its value.
Michael, I want to thank you for joining us. You have been early and courageous, and you continue to double down. I want to talk about where you think Bitcoin is, but also want to talk about how you think about a MicroStrategy and your company as a proxy for Bitcoin now that ETFs are available to the public.
On January 10th, 2024, Bitcoin IPO'd. It was officially stamped to the world that this is an asset class that's here to stay. It's marked a significant milestone for the cryptocurrency market. The SEC's approval encompassed 11 different applications from major institutions, including BlackRock, ARK Investments, 21 Shares, and Fidelity, just to name a few. The development is expected to drastically increase Bitcoin for a wider range of investors, allowing them to gain exposure to Bitcoin's price movement through a regulated investment product without the need to directly purchase, hold, and store the actual cryptocurrency. Most of these ETFs began trading the day after their approval was announced, initiating competition among the issuers for market share. Now, analysts have had varied predictions regarding the potential impact of these ETFs on the market. Some suggest that the ETFs could attract as much as $50 billion to $100 billion in inflows in the first year alone, while others estimate a more conservative figure of $55 billion over the next 5 years. The approval is viewed as a significant positive step toward the institutionalization of Bitcoin as an asset class and is expected to offer a safer and more accessible way for investors to engage in the Bitcoin community, the Bitcoin product, and what we like to call orange peeled, baby.
Sure. Well, I think I'd start just with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is certainly at least digital gold. It's going to eat gold. It's got all of the great attributes of gold, and it's got none of the defects of gold. If you could teleport gold from New York to Tokyo in a few minutes, people would like it.
Gold and Bitcoin both reaching record levels. You've got gold just around eyeing 2,200 level as investors becoming a little bit more optimistic about rate cuts this year. Now Bitcoin climbing above $72,000, that reaching that level for the first time ever. Let's talk about the massive climb to the upside. What's behind this record-setting rally? We want to bring in Ben Emmons. He is the New Edge Wealth Senior Portfolio Manager, Head of Fixed Income and Macro, joining us. Now, Ben, it's great to have you here. So explain to us and the viewer here why we're seeing the record-setting run-up in both gold and Bitcoin at the same time.
I think it's all about supply, Shauna, because you know, in both cases, there's very limited supply. And if you then have, uncertainty, which may be dealing with a little bit currently, and a lot of talk about Fed easing, and they may go as soon as June, typically that gives gold a lift up. In the case of Bitcoin, it's about this halving event in April.
It's going to divert capital from risk assets and risk ETFs like SPY. And you can see that these ETFs are doing that. It's going to be incorporated into a lot of funds like the BlackRock Global Opportunities Fund or the Strategic Income Opportunities Fund. And so as it's an asset class. As it goes into other funds, it's going to become structural. The halving is going to cut the organic supply of natural sellers in half around April 20th. That means there's only about $31, $32 million a day of natural sellers. And the price of Bitcoin is going to have to adjust up in order to meet that investor demand. So I think that's what's going to happen next to the asset class.
You've probably heard Michael Saylor just talk about the Bitcoin halving. You may or may not understand this concept. If not, a brush up on crypto is a good idea. Listen, you don't need to understand how to code all the exact in and outs to understand the blockchain. A lot of people bury their head in the ground and have just chosen ignorance instead of utilizing the brain that God has gave them. Listen, this is super simple. The fourth Bitcoin halving, every approximately 4 years, the reward that the miners get paid for being the network. So just these very simple to understand. There are people who have these computers. Now, this is connected to the stock market. Part of the reason that the QQQ has been going so high, and part of the reason NVIDIA is they're tied to these industries that are doing groundbreaking futuristic work. That is the point of technology. Technology is stuff progressing. There was a time when Campbell's Soup was a technology stock. They figured out how to manufacture and put food into cans. There was a time when Exxon was a technology stock. They were using the latest industrial technology to pull oil and then manufacture it using scientists to make it into oil. Everything starts out as a technology stock. Uber, the reason the price of Uber went up so high wasn't because Gerald Peters picked it. It's because they were already working on using AI. You get what I'm saying? These companies are utilizing. There are so many applications for the blockchain in real life. But back to the halving. The fourth halving event will occur in April. I forget the exact day. The halving happens about every 4 years and is when the block reward for mining Bitcoin is cut in half. Right now, the daily production cap is 900 Bitcoins. So you could take 900, multiply it times the price of Bitcoin, and that is how much Bitcoin reward is available every day in the world if you have an ASIC computer and you're mining Bitcoin. Historically, halvings have boosted Bitcoin's price. Duh. This is basic economics. If 900 Bitcoins are consumed every day right now, so they're making 900 of them, and yet the price goes up, that means more people are buying them than there are Bitcoin. That's why the price is going up. What's unique about this halving event is the supply will be even more limited due to all the ETF managers like ARK, Fidelity, and BlackRock, and others. Retail investors, people for four years that I've been saying buy Bitcoin are texting me now. The ETF approval gave institutions and retail investors a fractionless way to gain exposure to Bitcoin without having to own the underlying asset. Guys, the inventory is fixing to get cut in half in face of 11 institutional players vying for Bitcoin in face of Bitcoin miners now getting paid less, meaning if you're on struggling, you're out. You're out. You're going to go bust. Everything is setting up, man. I don't know what the price is going to be, but everything economically in the supply-demand part of the equation says higher.
Number one rule of Wall Street. Nobody, I don't care if you're Warren Buffett or if you're Jimmy Buffett, nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in fucking circles. Least of all stockbrokers. Right?
going to go lower or have a quote-unquote sell rating, as we often say, aren't even engaging in making a price target for the cryptocurrency. But some of the targets that we highlighted here, Standard Chartered Bank saying Bitcoin's going to go to 100,000 by year end. Skybridge sees 110,000 by year end. Fundstrat's Tom Lee has made a public call of 150,000 for the biggest cryptocurrency in the world. A lot of what these different firms seem to be highlighting is essentially it's a demand-driven product, right? We're really just talking about demand and how that's going to move price. The ETFs brought a lot more demand than we had previously seen for the crypto. There's not all the coins are mined, right? So as demand goes up, price is going to go up. It's a little bit of a basic scenario when it comes to that. David,
In terms, though, of how investors should think about your company, and right now I think they think of your company as a proxy for Bitcoin. It was a way for investors, frankly, who didn't want to buy the underlying coins to get access to Bitcoin and exposure to Bitcoin. The question now, though, that these ETFs have been approved and folks are funneling money towards BlackRock and so many others, how should they think about your company versus doing that?
Yeah, so BlackRock is like the container ship or the super tanker of Bitcoin. They can take $1 billion a day into their capital structure, and they can haul that very efficiently, 25 basis points. MicroStrategy is like air freight. We got a higher performance. So what's going on here? MicroStrategy's got leverage. If we borrowed $800 million at 62 basis points, is there any company in the world that you wouldn't like to invest in that could borrow $1 billion at less than 1% interest to invest in your best idea? So we get that very intelligent leverage. It's non-recourse. It's unsecured. And then we buy Bitcoin with it. That leverage gives us volatility. It gives us performance. The performance gives us volatility. The volatility attracts capital, and we can then leverage more. It's kind of intelligent because it's convertible debt. It's given our shareholders more Bitcoin per share this week than they had a few weeks ago. So it's very accretive for them. And it's pretty compelling for every investor. If you're Bitcoin curious right now and you want to buy Bitcoin at the all-time high, how do you get the upside in Bitcoin with downside protection? MicroStrategy sold $800 million in debt, and we have $12, $13 billion of Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So we're giving you an over-collateralized loan and the upside. But if you're a Bitcoin maximalist and you love Bitcoin and you want to hold it forever, the ETFs charge at 25 basis points. MicroStrategy is accreting. We're giving you a yield against your shares in a tax-efficient fashion. So the maximalists like the equity. The hedgers, they kind of like the upside with downside protection. The traders love the vol. You know, we've got 100x, 100 vol asset here, and they just like the vol. So we're unique because you can't really trade options on the ETFs. And an ETF isn't going to issue a convertible bond with upside to Bitcoin, but downside protection.
So Michael, I try to understand the mathematics, and I know people like you, you went to MIT, and it just seems maybe it's more understandable for you or Andreessen or Peter Thiel or whatever. At 17, down from 68, and you know your leverage and everything else, did you ever wake up in the middle of the night and have any doubt whatsoever? That's my one question, because I was thinking about you at 17,000, and now I look at it now, and I just can't believe what the market cap of your company is based on it now.
I've said it repeatedly on social media, in my books, in my talks, podcasts like this. To be an investor is not about how much you can bench press. You know, I know a lot of people like to work out indoors in the air conditioning when it's really nice and comfortable. It's not about your intelligence. You could have a PhD. It's not about your size or how good looking you are. None of those attributes. It's about what you have inside. It takes the use of intangibles like courage to formulate an idea on your own to develop and build your own conviction, to study to show thyself approved, as the Apostle Paul said in the Bible. People know more about where they're going on a trip, or the type of car they own, or how the NFL works, or what player was drafted, than they understand the Bitcoin halving in April. A sentimental landmark event that could make their family fucking rich. And they don't know. And it's not because God didn't come and knock. He sent John the Baptist and people like me to proclaim the way for the Savior, Bitcoin. And just like John the Baptist, they cut his head off. I got two subpoenas last year. Yeah, subpoenas. As in SEC sending legal documents to threaten me, to take everything I have, to stop talking about Bitcoin. Take it to fucking zero. I am not selling it. It is mine. Conviction and courage. Take Uber to fucking zero. The reason I can say that is I'm not all in. You understand that, right? It's one play. It's my best play. I'm going to put money behind it. This game takes courage. If you do not have courage, do not invest in the stock market. It doesn't matter how much you can bench press. It doesn't matter how much cardio or cycling you can do or spin class. Or how many stickers you got in eighth grade. Or how Miss Mary Johnson likes you. None of the shit that you've been given in this world. None of the pats on the back. Your mama can't help you. You're going to have what is inside of you. You're going to have to pull that out. And listen, you have everything you need inside of you to be great, to be awesome, and to get fucking rich. God has given you time after time after time. All of these plays in stocks. Were you watching? What is distracting you, if anything is? And if you caught these, good. It's not going to happen in one cycle. It takes 7 to 10 years of staying on this. Not being distracted like the minnow men and the weaklings that surround us. The little pea brains that are constantly distracted. Oh, look. And they look over here and they look over there and they can't keep their focus on the markets, on Bitcoin, on the stocks. They can't do it. They got rabbit brain. You can do it, man. You can do it. Have courage. You must have courage to be successful in the stock market.
I guess, and the other thing is, when it halves, should we, if we look at it on stock to flow, do we have to just double what the potential price is based on if you use that metric? Is that a valid metric to use? And after the halving, shouldn't it be 140,000 immediately if it's worth 72 now?
Two good questions. And thanks for asking me. First, with regard to Bitcoin, no, there's no doubt in my mind Bitcoin was a better investment at 17,000 than it was at 65,000. I take the Warren Buffett view on this. Bitcoin's a superior investment to gold, equity, bonds, and real estate because it's digital. You can trade it a million times faster than conventional assets using a computer. It's available. Most other assets only trade less than 20% of the time. Bitcoin's trading 168 hours a week. We bought $800 million of Bitcoin, and a lot of it we bought over the weekend when all the conventional markets are closed.
Key to making money in a situation like this is to position yourself now before the settlement, because by the time you read about it in the Wall Street Journal, it's already too late.
And it's global. It's the most widely recognized and trusted investment asset in the world right now. It's ethical because it's the king of all commodities. There's no issuer. There's no company. There's no country controlling it. And fundamentally, it's useful. Thousands of market makers can trade it all the time. Millions of companies can trade it. Billions of people. If you want to buy a house on Saturday in Africa, this is the way to do it. If you want to buy a car on Sunday morning, this is the way to do it. So So it's a pretty great asset. It's the greatest of the assets, in my opinion. There's no second best asset. So I didn't have any question about it. We're just waiting for the rest of the world to realize how good it is. As for your second question, the halving, look, the selling in the market for the past month has been primarily bankruptcy estates that are liquidating GBTC at FTX or Genesis or the like. Once they got done rebalancing, the natural sellers are the miners. The miners can only sell 900 Bitcoin a day right now. They're only going to be able to sell 450 Bitcoin a day coming the end of April. As long as there's more demand in the market than the 450 Bitcoin a day, there isn't any catalyst to drive this asset down. It has no cash flows. The critics think that's a defect. It's a feature. With no cash flows, no quarterly results, no product cycles, this is the longest lived asset in the financial ecosystem with the least uncertainty. We're buying it to hold it 100 years. So that being the case, that $66,000 to $16,000 crash, that shook out the tourists, that shook out the non-believers. When it was $16,000, we were all ready to ride it to zero. And that's what you'll find with the Bitcoin maximalist. So now we're riding it the other direction, and the protocol's working to everybody's benefit. There's just no reason why it shouldn't just keep adjusting up to find the marginal supply as the demand builds.
Your market cap, Michael, is about $24 billion. You mentioned you got about $15 billion in Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So the substantial part of your market cap is now Bitcoin as opposed to your core software business. Does a software business exist solely so you can borrow off of that in order to buy Bitcoin? And how can we understand right now the health of your business as you undergo a transition of customers to cloud-based software?
I gotta say, I'm incredibly excited to be a part of your firm. I mean, the clients you have are absolutely...
Fuck the clients. Your only responsibility is to put meat on the table.
You got a girlfriend?
I'm married. I have a wife. Her name's Teresa. She cuts here.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Think about Teresa. Name of the game? Move the money from your client's pocket into your pocket.
Right. But if you can make a client's money at the same time, it's advantageous to everyone, correct?
No. Number one rule of Wall Street. Nobody, I don't care if you're Warren Buffett or if you're Jimmy Buffett, nobody knows if a stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in fucking circles. Least of all stockbrokers.
We have now rebranded ourselves as a Bitcoin development company. Think like a real estate development company. And certainly the substantial amount of our enterprise value is based on our unique ability to issue securities and to purchase Bitcoin with convertible debt, with equity and the like. And so we understand that. But the only reason we could make this transition is because the software business was healthy. It does generate steady cash flow. It does allow us to issue debt, to issue equity. It does make us unique because we're able to, we've got a very functional options market. We've got a very functional debt market, and we've got a very stable operating business that we can use.
Fugazi, you know what Fugazi is?
Fugazi, it's a fake.
Yeah, Fugazi, Fugazi, it's a wazi, it's a woozy, it's a
fairy dust. It doesn't exist. It's never landed. It is no matter. It's not on the elemental chart. It's not fucking real. Right?
All right.
Stay with me.
Mm-hmm.
We don't create shit. We don't build anything.
No.
So if you got a client who bought stock at 8 mm-hmm. and it now sits at 16 and he's all fucking happy, he wants to cash in, liquidate, take his fucking money and run home, you don't let him do that.
Okay.
Because that would make it real.
Right.
Now, what do? You get another brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. A special idea. Another situation. Another stock to reinvest his earnings and then some. And he...
If you look at our last result, we actually bought a lot of Bitcoin with operating cash or cash out of the operating business, and that is purely accretive to our shareholders. So we think we're unique, and that's working very, very well right now.
Hey, Michael, do you think long-term that there's any risk at this point? Has Bitcoin reached such escape velocity that there's any risk that governments... the U.S. government, Chinese government, other governments somehow do something to Bitcoin that puts its growth in jeopardy?
You know, it's another great question, Andrew. A lot of times the skeptics, they say Bitcoin looks too good to be true. It's so good to be true, someone's going to take it away from you. And that's based on a fundamental misunderstanding about Bitcoin. People refer to it as currency or digital currency, and that's unfortunate historical artifact. It's not digital currency. It's digital property. And once you make that big leap and understand it's property, you see, the compelling use case is capital preservation for...
Talk that way to me. Never! Never! What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week. Which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets it.
For everyone in the world, there's no anathema associated with owning property. You can own a $1 billion building in New York City. You can own every place in the world where they allow you to own property, which means China, Europe, the U.S., they're going to embrace Bitcoin as digital property. All the controversial issues around cryptos have to do with their use as a medium of exchange. But what I'm here to say really is medium of exchange is only worth $1 trillion. Store of value is worth $100 trillion. So I give your company, I give your family, I give your institution $1 billion. I drop you in Africa and I say, you got to save the capital for 100 years. What are you going to buy? And the answer is nothing. There is nothing on the entire continent you can buy that's better than Bitcoin. So Bitcoin's going to be embraced as property. It's going to be controversial if people think of it as a currency. So I would encourage people to think of it as digital property, a $1 billion building in cyberspace. And hold it for 100 years.
Does it ever have to be a currency? Or do you think it ever becomes a quote-unquote currency?
It doesn't have to be a currency. Nobody's trying to buy a cup of coffee with a fraction of their building on Fifth Avenue, right? But every rich person I know owns property in London or New York City or somewhere, and none of them complain about not being able to spend their building to as a medium of exchange. So the killer application is capital preservation for everybody. The store of value is the killer use case. Medium of exchange is a distraction. Governments are always going to issue currency. They're always going to make it legal tender. And that's just fine. Bitcoin's competing with gold. It's going to eat it. And then it's competing with risk assets as a long-term hold. And it's competing with you buying an Airbnb as a retirement income source if you're a middle-class person.
As we wrap up today's podcast, listen, few, and I mean very few people, care about you and your well-being, and most of all, very few care about your financial independence. So we must do it. We must care about it. We must love ourselves. We must protect ourselves. Talk to yourself. It's okay. Text yourself. I do. Text yourself stories or articles you need to go back and read. See, life doesn't care if you build a solid foundation or a wall, so to speak, around your castle. It doesn't care if you succeed. No one's going to make you do it. Financial independence is a must, and you must build a wall of assets around your castle. Only a small percentage will ever do it because it is not required. The government's not going to make you. Your office, your boss isn't going to make you. This comes down to personal responsibility. Pillar number 10, take full responsibility for everything. The masses, well, they live in a delusion. You must invest in assets that appreciate and produce cash flow rather than on depreciating assets. It's not that complicated. It's pretty simple. In that process, focus on giving, serving others, help people, lend a hand, open a door, say something nice. Be kind, be fair, be honest, but be a monster if you must. Align your goals with your highest values and use them to serve others. That's where the money is. There is a difference in motivation than inspiration. Motivation fades. Maybe this podcast motivates you. You need to worry about inspiration. Motivation fades, inspiration inspires. Break down your goals into tiny steps and listen, just get a little bit better each day. Be a little bit better at self-control. Be a little bit better at self-regulation. A little bit better at self-governance. In maintaining balance and happiness and success. It's not easy. Believe me, I know it's a struggle. Life pulls us. It's easy to get rabbit holed. Let a voice enter your head, one like mine, doesn't have to be mine, that keeps pulling you back to the path.
We'll do well. Reserve some for the foundlings.
As it should always be. The foundlings are the future. This is the way.
This is the way.
And in the words of the Mandalorian, this is the way. The money flow is the way. Align your values. Serve others. Make wise decisions. Make a goal to build wealth, to build income, to increase your skills, to build a financial fortress, a wall or a financial moat of assets that produce income that appreciate. This is the way. God bless. Hey, thanks for listening to the Money Flow Trading's podcast, Mastering the Trade. With me, your host, Gerald Peters. Listen, if there is anything I can do for you, all you got to do, man, is reach out, text me, DM me, PM me, catch me in Discord, catch me on Twitter at FullAuto11, on Instagram at FullAuto11. That's FullAuto. Double tap, baby, 11. And hey, catch me on YouTube as well. Grab a copy of my free ebook. You don't have to die broke. Man, if you want to learn how to trade stocks, let me help you. I think I got a way. Appreciate you. Peace.